It feels like October. We're close now. Red October. We knew it was back a couple days ago, but it's officially back as division champions. The Phillies clinch it last night. NL East champs for the first time since 2011. Now we find out, one or two seed entering the NL playoffs. Welcome back, Midday Show. Joe Giglio, Hugh Douglas, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. All right, we're going to play a little montage for in a few minutes. We put together a montage here, Hugh, of the unsung heroes of the season. Because obviously this thing's led by Bryce and Schwarber and Trey and Bohm and Wheeler and Nola. But doesn't it feel like there's a lot of guys this year that contributed to wins over the course of the season?
Oh, yeah. And I just waiting to hit a montage.
We're coming with it. A few minutes, we'll play for you the Phillies montage of the unsung heroes that helped them win the NL East. But how about this? I'm looking at our poll question today at WIP Midday Show. Twitter question sponsored by the PI Dental Center. Your smile is the first thing others see when they meet. You learn about and schedule your evaluation, PIDentalCenter.com. The voting on this is pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Should Nick Sirianni be allowed to override Kellen Moore? Okay, again, this is the head coach of the football team.
Oh, this don't sound like it's going good.
51.3% yes, 48.7%
That's
no.
Not bad.
No,
but it's not as bad as I thought it was. I thought it was going to be something like 70%.
I am actually a little surprised too, but it's just interesting to me that it's split in half. That half of fans believe, yeah, of course, he's the head coach of the team. If he wants to override the coordinator, he overrides the coordinator. And 50% are like, absolutely not. This is crazy.
So can I please get a better reason from somebody other than he's the head coach? Like, what that reminds me of is when I was a kid, and my parents would say, no, like, this can't happen.
Yeah. Because I'm your father.
And they would say, because I said so.
That's darn right.
You know what? I'm not a kid anymore. Give me a real reason. Talk to me like I'm an adult and explain to me why this bozo, and to be clear, I don't think he's a moron like some of the callers have said, but I don't think he should have any part of this offense. I think he's fine with, I think he doesn't get enough credit sometimes when the team wins. Sometimes I think he gets too much crap when they lose, like when Saquon dropped the ball in week two. But this is a separate conversation.
Can I help you off
my offense.
Can I help you out with this? Because I've had this conversation with my kids.
I think all parents have.
Like, and you know what I used to tell my kids when they say, well, why can't you give me an answer? You know what I used to tell them? Because I pay bills and you live with me. And as soon as you move out, then everything that I say won't carry no more weight. It won't be as absolute. So, yeah, that's
well,
what I would
that's
say.
A real reason. Not just because I said so.
Okay. You just wanted to
because
want
he's the head coach pisses me off.
I don't care. I will give you a reason, okay? Because now you want more context because
that's what he is.
Because
that's
he's the head coach doesn't is not enough.
Yeah, because
for you?
Okay. It feels like a wasted point.
Okay,
forget about it.
All right, I'll continue the sentence. Because he's the head coach, inherently he's in charge of the coaches. He's the head of the snake.
Yeah. He's not in charge of the offense.
But he's an okay.
he's
but
not
in his mind, he's an offensive coach. That's who he is.
But he's not.
Okay, but we may think he's not.
No, we know he's not.
No, he doesn't know that. he doesn't know that.
We know he's not.
I just feel like
he was an offensive coordinator at one time.
I'm just dealing reality here.
The reality is the Eagles set this up. it's his natural instinct to want to say, hey, I like that play. Let's run it now.
That's good for him.
Then you know what?
He can't do it.
I know our last caller was joking around about a shock collar with Big Dom. I mean, you may have to tell him he's not allowed because he's going to do it. This is going to happen again and again when push comes to shove. Now, I don't think he's doing it on the first drive of the game because they planned that out.
Mm-hmm.
But when push comes to shove, which was what? Third down against the Falcons throwing the football right before halftime against the Saints. You think on Sunday when there's a tough moment, he's not going to get involved? Of course he's going to get involved because he's coaching for his job number one.
Well, they're going to lose.
Well,
I'm just saying, instead of talking about titles and all that stuff, like, can we talk about what's best for this football team?
I'll put it this way. If I was him and Howie or Jeff said to me this week, hey, Nick, no more of that, I'd resign on the spot. Why am I here? If I can't lend my expertise
so you'll be
in the biggest moment, I'm out of here.
Wait a minute, Joe. Okay, I need some context with this.
Okay.
Did you just make the decisions that you made? In the game, in-game decisions.
Didn't you hear him? He thought it was for the best.
No, I'm asking a question. So you're going to stand on principle in that moment?
In that moment. you guys are asking for something unrealistic.
No, I'm just saying. You've had two questionable calls 2 weeks in a row. And that's the moment you want to put your foot down and be like, well, if I can't make these calls, then I'm leaving.
I'm out.
That's what you're going
to
do?
Yes, but they've neutered him to the point where he's not even allowed to override a coordinator.
Neutered is so strong.
Well, that's what – I mean, we have people talking about shot callers here. All right, 215-592-9494.
Isn't football freaking awesome, guys?
It is. It really is. Like, let's talk to Jasper, who's up. What's up, Jasper?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Hey, Jasper. What's up, pal?
Hey, Hugh, miss you for in Atlanta, but, you know, Eagles are everywhere.
Hey, we appreciate you, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, first thing I want to say is Kellen Moore was not Sirianni's first choice as coordinator, okay? This goes back to the death of Howie. Howie started all of this, and it's coming back on him, okay? And the main thing is Sirianni, as an offensive coordinator, he should know, he should learn the playbook just like the quarterback. So he doesn't have to run over there and do a postcard, vacation postcard, over his mouth and 14 seconds to go before the halftime and make a call and override his offensive coordinator. And if you notice from the TV shot, Kellen Moore just eased out to the side. Like, I'm not getting in on this one. Okay, he has a headset. He can get on the headset and tell Kellen Moore, hey, let's run the push. Okay, I know it sounds ridiculous, run the push. Okay, but you take the 3 points. You kick the field goal. You're in a defensive struggle. It's like when you get in an NFL defensive struggle where both defenses are playing lights out, you take any point you can get. A 2-point safety will help you win. And that's what you do. And one other thing is the team is noticing this. That's morale among the team. And to give you a contrast to that is, remember when on the sidelines when Jalen Carter was like talking trash to one of the LSU guys mm-hmm. who played against in college?
Yep.
Okay. And the big offensive linemen were trying to calm him down. And Sirianni went over there and tried to inject himself in it. And the look Jalen gave him was like, man, you don't understand SEC. Okay. So other players are watching this. And it's like, it's going to divide the team. So Howie has to make a decision. Because if it keeps going like this, then you have to make a coaching change in the middle of the season.
Well, it's possible. I mean, Jasper, I know they don't want to do it in the Eagles, and we appreciate the call. The Eagles rarely do this. I mean, the last time we had this in a season was Chip, and there was a week to go. This is not the way I think they want to operate. But mm-hmm. it could become a thing. I'm just, if we don't allow him to have input, then there's really no reason for him to be here. It really is that simple. All right, we'll get back to your calls in a second. But first, we wanted to give a little shout-out to the unsung heroes who helped the Phillies get to where they got to, NL East champs. It's not just about Bryce. It's not just about Trey and Schwarber. They had a lot of wins from a lot of players that you might forget their name over the course of the season. Here's a little montage of the unsung heroes of the 2024 NL East champs.
Pulls up shy of the track, makes the catch. And the side's retired. It's 7 shutout innings tonight for Spencer Turnbull. Turnbull, who does have a no-hitter to his credit. That was back in May of 2021. He'll get a nice hand from the crowd here tonight. Finnegan ready, and his 1-0 pitch. Swung on, hit in the air, right center field, up the alley. Diddy. It's got a chance. This game is tied! Cody Clemens! Cody Clemens with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth inning has tied the game 3-3.
Swings and blasts one. High in the air, deep center. Going for the angled wall, looking up at it. Ciotti, it's gone! Edmundo Sosa with a bomb to the left of the batter's eye in center. It's a 2-run shot against his former club. And the Phillies have a 3-0 lead.
The 2-2 pitch. Swing and a fly ball left field. Austin Hayes is there. He's waiting. He's got it. And Tyler Phillips pounds a fist into his glove, gives a hug to JT Realmuto as the kid growing up a Phillies fan now has a complete game shutout on the mound here at Citizens Bank
There's
Park.
There's nothing that I could have ever dreamed about this. I mean, I'm at a loss for words. I have no idea what to say. It's awesome. The team plays the game the right way behind me, and I love every second of it.
Swung on line over the leap of DeJong. It's down the left field line. Into scores Marsh. Stubbs trying for 2. Rojas is in at third. And Garrett Stubbs is a home run shy of the cycle today.
Well, and it is going to one hop off the wall. 2 runs are going to score. Cal Stevenson will shut it down at second. He thought about third, but it's a 2-out. 2-run double for Cal Stevenson, and the Phillies take the lead.
2 balls, 2 strikes. Peterson's pitch. Swung on. Hit deep down the left field line. That's going to tie the game. Buddy Kennedy delivers. Wilson will score. Back-to-back doubles, and we're tied up at 1.
Off
the right field wall. It's in play. Bounds away. Back towards the infield. Wilson around second. He's heading for third. He's going to be there with a stand-up triple. Jam shot towards second. Coming on Garcia. It drops. Swing by Wilson. He hits one deep to right center. And this one is going to go. Weston Wilson with an opposite field home run. Hit in the air, right center field, on the run, call. He will lay out, it's off his glove. Wilson's around first, he's headed for second, and he's got the cycle. Weston Wilson has hit for the cycle tonight for the Phillies.
They're comfortable here, and they know they can do it. And I trust them, and I think they know that. So, we're going to have some tough decisions.
The unsung heroes here of the 2024 Phillies. Sosa, Clemens, some of the names I think people are going to forget about. Tyler Phillips with the complete game. Stubbs, Cal Stevenson, Buddy Kennedy, Weston Wilson.
Wait a minute. That was all the names?
That was all this year. Yeah, they were all in there.
Wait a minute, where's Rojas?
Well, I don't know if he's an unsung hero.
He's supposed to be an everyday player.
He plays all the time.
No, but he's unsung. He needs his props.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
That's what you were waiting for?
Yes.
He's an everyday player.
No, but he's still an unsung hero. Because a lot of people was down on him. He was down bad.
He's not going to the montage.
This is the principality of the situation. He deserves to be one of the unsung heroes.
I'm the producer. I said so.
I mean, fine. I'm not going to try to. But I'm just saying, I'm protesting. I'm a protest.
Protesting the montage?
It's not a silent protest. Oh, what do you call it when it's not silent? A loud protest.
Yeah.
10-2 every day is a really loud protest in Philadelphia on this radio station. All right, 215-592-9494. We'll get to all your phone calls here. We'll talk to Ross Tucker at 12:30 about that and more. We also have some good audio to play next. Micah Parsons calling out C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You got to hear this. That's next. Your calls. Sirianni and a Phillies clinch on Sports Radio 94 WIP. NFL Week 4 is here, and you can start with a chance to win a big on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New to FanDuel, you get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Thursday night, we got the Cowboys and the Giants. I will take Dallas to win this game on the money line. Give me the over CeeDee Lamb receiving yards. Anytime touchdown for Malik Nabers. Visit FanDuel.com/GIGLIO to make every moment more this season. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official partner of 94 WIP. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gillette, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard here. Ross Tucker's going to join the show coming up at 12:30. Perhaps a surprise coming your way at 12:45. We're working on something for you. Next hour, we have an investigation to open up here around the NFL and something we have to keep our eye on here in Philadelphia. Plus, kiss the baby as we'll eliminate another team after week three in the NFL. Complete last night. Let's go to Terrence here at Springfield. What's up, Terrence?
Who's on, Kyle? What's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you feeling?
What's going on?
First of all, I want to touch on the Phillies, but I'm going to touch on the Eagles real quick. Sirianni shouldn't be overriding anything. Like, he's not good at that job. Last time I recall, didn't he give up play calling because he wasn't good at it?
Yes.
So his decision making isn't there. Sometimes I feel like Sirianni's out here like he's playing Madden or something. He's out there going for it on fourth down.
That's not the first time I've heard that today.
Yeah, like, this is not Madden. Like, you hear not me, the guys that I play on Madden, I'm like, bro, you're going to punt? No, I ain't punting. They go for it, turn everyone down, they end up getting 21 skunk. Like, Sirianni, it's 2 weeks in a row, you could have cost us. It could have been 2 weeks in a row, you cost us losses. So I feel like if Kellen Moore, he's born here to do a certain thing, and that's run this offense. So, Sirianni, you run the team. You manage the team and do that because you're not good at situational. You're not good at play calling. So leave it to Kellen Moore. He knows what he's doing. He's a veteran. He's been in this league for a long time, and he's proven. So on that note, Sirianni, you need to take a back seat because I don't like your philosophy. I don't like your press conferences because it looks like you don't know what you're talking about. You're just all over the place talking about stories in high school. Like, I don't want to hear that stuff. I want to talk about how you're going to get this team going in the right direction and not cost us games. As for the Phillies, I told Kyle, I don't want no celebrating right now, man. I want us to finish the job. The Phillies have done this 3 years in a row, right? They've been in the playoffs.
Yep.
They've done all this champagne popping and all that. This is the thing I hate about baseball. This is the one thing I hate about baseball. They celebrate like they won a championship when they make the playoffs, when they win a division, when they make it to the next round in the World Series. That's stupid to me because it's giving the team a false hope like they already won something that they didn't win. So I feel like let's hold off and let's pop some bottles and celebrate when we win that World Series. Because we all know the last couple of years, we collapsed. And, the dancing on my own, it's okay. But, man, if you don't finish it this year, they got to trash that song.
Yeah, this is probably the last run they could use it for. And it probably will be. Terrence, we preached the call. Here's where I'm at on all the celebrations. And it is a uniquely baseball thing. It, like, they celebrate after everything or, you know, on the path to a championship. This felt different because they hadn't won a division yet.
Yeah.
And it's a long journey to win this thing. I'm good with going crazy last night. I do wonder, and I expect, Hugh, let's say they win the division series, you know, a week from Tuesday, right, mm-hmm. against the Padres or Brewers or whoever. I think the first round victory celebration is going to be a little bit more subdued. It's old hat. I don't think the Astros, you know, they've been in the ALCS, what, 7 straight years? They've won some World Series.
Yeah.
I don't think they celebrate anymore after the first round the way they probably did 7 years ago, right?
They're used to this now. Yeah, because they expect to do it.
Now, that's what I think they'll celebrate. I just think it'll be a little more subdued. Now, if you make the World Series, that's hard, right? Like, go
yeah,
crazy
that's no
again.
Joke.
And then the big one is the World Series. I expect you, though, if they win the first round series, they'll celebrate. I wouldn't imagine it'd be crazy, though.
No, they're probably going to still celebrate. But I was listening to him talk about last night how for Bryce, this is only the fifth time he's done it. Done it a couple times with the Nationals, I think.
And his first time here. Yeah, he won, I think, 2 or 3 with the Nats divisions, 12, 14,
But the point
16?
Is this, they're hard to do. And so you should, I think that, since they've been doing it in baseball this long,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. But when you're in a situation where, you know, you've went to the second round and everything, I can see them toning it down a little bit and getting ready for the next one.
I have one exception, because I'm with you. If they play the Mets in the first round in the NLDS and they beat them, I want them to act like the Mets acted when they won a game to get back 6 games in the division the other night. Like,
yes.
I don't think I can remember a group of weenies more than the New York Mets.
Well, led
this
by
year.
Alonso. He's a weenie.
And Nimmo. I think Nimmo is the ultimate weenie in all of baseball. I can't stand that dude. So if they beat the Mets, I want them to do all the little trots that Alvarez was doing around the bases, all of that stuff. I want them to rub it in their face. Because I can't stand that.
I do like that. All right, before we get to what Micah Parsons said about CJ GJ, we want to let you guys know, tomorrow night, our Schwarbaum Squad watch party at the Yards Tap Room. We're going to support Kyle and his foundation, Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes. And we got to thank Yards, too. They just brought us a ton of great food for lunch. So what did you guys? You guys got the Carolina pulled pork sandwich?
Yeah, and some quesadillas.
How's that?
Got some quesadillas is nice.
Cheesesteak egg
cheese
rolls.
Cheesesteak egg rolls are so good, man.
Yeah,
their food there is great. We appreciate it. They brought me the roasted root vegetables. Salad, some hummus. They have everything there. You can experience the Yards Tap Room, the new menu, tomorrow night at the Schwarbaum Squad Watch Party. So, look, you go, you donate $10, or you purchase a Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes camo t-shirt. The beers will be on Kyle. So, just buy a t-shirt. The beers then are on Kyle. You heard me right. Support Kyle's foundation, and Kyle and his family are giving you a free Philly Standard on him tomorrow night. First pitch, 6:05. For info, go to 94WIP.com. We'll be there tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Can't wait for that. All right, so before we go any further with your phone calls here, CJ GJ, we know he was, he was very excited after the win on Sunday, and he was talking about how they're the best secondary, best line, and he was excited. He beat his former team, a team that, in his mind, gave up on him. Well, Micah Parsons, as he's apt to do, he chimed in on one of the big stories in the NFL. Here's Micah on CJ GJ and the celebration on Sunday.
The Saints are a very good team, and CJ Gardner-Johnson said they're pretenders. They're not. There ain't no contenders. They're pretenders, and they have Derek Carr. Remember that. I don't know who CJ Gardner think he is, bro. I mean, we've been dealing with this cat for a while. I mean, we just got to be a little bit real right here. Like, I think Derek Carr has validated himself way before CJ has ever done. Like, in the most respectful way, I'm not taking away anything, but Derek Carr has been a Pro Bowl quarterback, before, highest paid quarterback before. Like, let's be real. Like, Derek Carr has always been a pretty damn quarterback.
Pretty? Like, you mean attractive?
I think he means pretty good. He left that word out, the good word.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I would have rolled him until he told
he's
me
like,
no.
He's a pretty quarterback. I was like, attractive? Is he attractive? I don't know.
What would you make of Micah there?
I understand him giving Derek Carr his flowers. You try not to be disrespectful. I think in the moment, I didn't take what CJ GJ said, I guess the way Micah did. I guess Micah's validating the fact that they beat the brakes off the Cowboys. So that's why he's saying what he said.
I think that's a lot of it. Yeah.
You know. But no, I didn't have a problem with I didn't have a problem with what CJ did. They played with a lot of bravado last week. The thing that I want them to do now is keep it up.
Do you happen to see CJ's response to Micah?
Yes, I did. I'm all about pettiness. I went on Twitter.
You saw what's going on?
Yeah, and I saw the responses that people had to CJ GJ compared to Micah Parsons. Well, people are ruthless.
The comment section is. CJ chimed in after Micah kind of ripped him there and said, quote, fam, the league knows who I am. Forget the narrative. At Micah Parsons. You could check my track record and how I overcame a lot. Won a lot more playoff games than you too, my guy. And then the salute emoji.
No, I mean, that's a fact.
Well, those,
I mean,
those,
you know,
are
that,
facts.
That's a fact. But boy, like, not to be that guy, but boy, when you have other people that are on the sidelines that chime in, and they start checking resumes, it got a little real.
I think the funniest part of that audio is that we've been dealing with this cat for a while now.
Yeah.
Sounds like a police officer, like, damn it, this dude again. Like, yeah. We gotta go arrest this guy.
He's on the run again.
Yeah, we had a good win this weekend. But yeah, Micah was trying to justify that ass whooping that they took a couple weeks
that's
ago.
That's exactly what, because if the Saints are pretenders, what are the Cowboys?
Yeah,
yeah. That's what
good,
that was.
We're a good team, too.
He's in his feelings. Chris, it's Sewell's up. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys, sorry. I tried to get in yesterday. I didn't get in. I was down in New Orleans, and I wanted to talk about the game. But let's get to your today's question. Joe, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking, should the head coach have the right to overrule?
Yes,
right?
Yes. That's what we're debating
okay.
today. Yep.
Not who we want him to.
Right. Should he?
All right, because I had a pretty heated argument with Kyle before this call. And
Kyle's an idiot.
With all due respect to Kyle, you know, it is like arguing with your two-year-old, and it is because, all right, we won't say because he's the head coach, but he's in charge. He's responsible. So, yes, at any given moment, he has the right to stick his two cents in, and if needed,
overrule if he thinks he has a better idea. Did it work? No. And I want to go on the record. I wanted Sirianni fired after the end of last year. But now that he's back, now that he's the head coach, parent, he has the responsibility for these children. And he's in a no-win situation. This team wins the Super Bowl, he'll get no credit. It's going to be Jalen Hurts. It's Saquon Barkley. It's A.J. Brown. They don't make the playoffs, he gets all the blame, no matter injuries, no matter how bad those guys play, whatever.
Chris, I agree with you on this. I agree with what you said at the end.
That's what he signed up for.
Yeah, but he did sign up, but the Eagles created this scenario. Like, there's almost like, do it our way or we're going to be mad. Well, there's a natural element to human nature. If push comes to shove, I'm the head coach. I'm going to make a call. I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm going to say we're doing it this way. Like, it's almost unrealistic what we're expecting out of this guy now.
I completely agree, Joe. And you're right. The Eagles created the scenario. This Eagles management is the same Eagles management that we finally had enough of Andy Reid. And Andy Reid was the complete opposite of this guy. He would got to do a better job, got to do a better job. He wouldn't give you anything. I agree with you, Hugh. He's a long talker. He gives you too much. Your advice to him going forward is the best advice. Less is more. And just a little context. Are they calling for the head coach's head in Cincinnati right now? Are they calling for Mike Shanahan's head right now? Or Kyle Shanahan's head right now? Dallas. You know, so let's put a little context on this. I'm not a huge Nick Sirianni fan. He's not blameless, but he does have the responsibility of this football team, win or lose. And if they don't perform, yeah, fire them. But right now they're 2-1.
Well, they are. Yeah,
should be 3-0. Should be.
Yep.
3-0.
I agree.
They could have been if so not for the play at the end. Chris, I agree. I mean, I think you make a lot of good points there. And there is also the point of this to where it's – I keep going back to human nature. Everyone knows – he knows if they don't perform, he's getting fired. So, like, the reality is he's going to try to add something on game day. Now, Hugh, the problem is he may be going too far. He may be going too far on game day, and that becomes a problem here. If he goes too far and he puts them in bad situations and then he's trying to talk his way through this thing – you know, that long talking, it never works, you.
No, it isn't. And I think that coach's best strategy throughout this whole process is just to lay out and let it play out. I mean, that's all you can do. Because at this point now, at this point in the season, you're going to get more questions. Every time there's a controversial call that's made, the question's going to come up. Hey, who made that call? And it's going to be spun in a way where, you know, they're going to try to talk around it, but you have to ask. As a reporter, you have to ask those questions. And he needs the best thing that he can do for himself is, number one, maintain his composure and just answer it to the best of his ability. If anybody asks you who's making the play call, stay away from that.
Don't open up that can of worms.
No, don't open up that can of worms.
Let's get to that and a lot more with our next guest. Yeah, you know who it is. You know who it is, Ross. It's Ross Tucker, Hugh Douglas.
Hey.
Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You hear him on CBS with the games at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, how you doing today?
Ross.
I am doing fantastic. I'm telling you guys, no matter how I'm doing, I'm always doing great when I come on and you guys play a Taylor song and I start to smile.
Ross, help me out. I forgot what school you came from. What school you go to? You went to one of them Ivy League schools, correct?
Yeah, I went to Prince University. It's the number one school in the country. No big deal.
No, I'm saying, so Ross, I need to ask you, in that situation, before the half.
15 yeah. seconds to go.
15
yeah.
seconds to go. If you're coaching a football team, Ross, with yep. your Ivy League education.
Sure.
What are you doing in that situation?
Oh, Hugh, I am so glad you asked this. Guys, I can't tell you. I think this is a really, really big deal and really interesting. Because most of the time when Sirianni has made decisions the past couple years, aggressive or not, I think you could lean on the fact that the Eagles have arguably the best analytics department in the NFL and that they're going with whatever model they have that indicates that that's the best decision. And so we can all acknowledge, okay, that they're going to be aggressive or they're going to do what the analytics tell them to do. That's why the end of the first half was so fascinating. Guys, there's not an analytical model in the world that would say going for it was the right decision there. I don't believe for a second that the people that talk to Sirianni during games to tell him what he should do or not do. I don't believe for a second that they told him to go. He more or less did that totally on his own, which I find very interesting. I'm not opposed to it. I do think sometimes coaches can use their gut or can use their instincts, but in that particular situation, the cost-benefit analysis is not even close. Even if you get it, you have to call timeout, and then you must throw one pass into the end zone. There could be a penalty. You could get sacked. You could get tackled short of the line of gain. That was the worst decision I think I've seen Sirianni make in terms of going for that and not kicking the field goal. But what's particularly interesting to me about it is, you know, the Eagles are a team that relies heavily on data, and he went against the data there. And I just find that fascinating because usually, I guess I'm under the impression that typically, you know, he is very much in line with the data and what all the numbers guys are telling him. I mean, they have a guy that his whole job is the game management, clock management stuff. So I just find that whole dynamic to be fascinating that he basically kind of went, I don't want to say went rogue, but he kind of did his own thing there.
Russ, the other part element to the play wasn't just the decision to go for it on fourth down. Sirianni volunteered after the game that he made the play call. It was his call on the play they ran, which obviously didn't work. But then that opens up a whole another can of worms. Russ, you of all of us here in this conversation, you're the only one that was on the offensive side. He was a defensive player I've been watching since high school. Russ, is that common? Is this over the top? Like, he's not the play caller. Kellen Moore is, but he's an offensive head coach. Take us into how it typically works. Do you think it's, you know, is it right that he's overruling him or changing a play, or is this kind of normal for a non-play caller, but that's his area of expertise to say, I want to run this play?
So the interesting part about that, Joe, is, you know, as a player, you never really know for sure how often the head coach overrules the coordinator, but that is very much a thing with the head coach's side of the football, right? Like, I don't think that Sirianni would ever do that with Vic Fangio, but I'm pretty confident he did it a number of times last year with Brian Johnson, right? Like, Brian Johnson was the play caller last year. He was the OC, but I'd be stunned if there weren't multiple times where Sirianni, you know, felt like he had a feel for something, felt good about something, and said, hey, Brian, let's, and sometimes it might just be, let's run it here. Sometimes it might be, let's take a shot here. Sometimes it might be the actual play. Like I said, hard to know exactly how often coaches do that, but definitely that happens, I would say, more often than people realize. You don't usually hear about it because it's not really in anyone's best interest, right? If the play is not successful, the head coach doesn't want it out there that he overruled. And even if the play is successful, it's still not something that you want to put out there a lot, that the head coach is overruling the coordinator, more or less for what we're going through right now, right? More or less for this conversation, because then it's always the conversation of, well, how do you know when to overrule or not to overrule, when to go your own way or not, which is basically similar to what we just said about the decision to go for on fourth down at all.
Yeah, you almost twist yourself into a pretzel to figure the whole thing out. Ross Tucker joining us here. Ross, what did you make of the play of Jalen Hurts on Sunday? Yeah, very productive, completion percentage well over 70, and that's without Lane, without the right guard, without both receivers at the end, led a game-winning drive. But, of course, there's two more turnovers, including interception in the end zone. Ross, what did you make of how Jalen played in this game?
I would give him a B, I guess. You know, one of the things I think is interesting, a couple things. He's still, his pocket presence leaves a decent amount to be desired for me. I still think he leaves at times when he shouldn't and does not. You know how, like, remember back in the day, Dan Marino always would just slide a little bit or step up. I mean, Dan Marino ran like a 7-second 40, yet he was such a good pocket mover. Brady's obviously was fantastic at it. I still think that's an area for improvement. For Hurts, the two things that really jumped out to me about this game, guys, it still looks to me like there are times on a zone read where he pulls the ball and runs it when it looks to me like he should be giving the ball to the running back.
Mm.
I almost wish they would call more just design runs. And then also, the same thing on the RPO game. There are times where he'll pull it and throw it, and again, it looks like there's a big hole for the running back. The thing that's so interesting, I want you guys to watch it. We'll see what happens Sunday, because last year, obviously, Bowles and the Bucks blitzed the crap out of Jalen. But if you watch the Saints, now I think the offensive line did a good job. They did. And they were giving him really a crazy amount of time. But, and Hugh can speak to this better than I can, Joe, because I'm quite sure Hugh probably hates it. But the Saints, on a lot of those snaps, they were cage rushing Joe, which means their primary focus is to not let the quarterback escape, as opposed to trying to beat your offensive lineman no matter what and trying to get a sack. That was secondary. What was primary for the Saints was to bull rush, was to keep Hurts in the pocket. Dennis Allen, the D coordinator and head coach for the Saints, he basically decided, and by the way, I think he made a wrong choice, but he basically decided, I'm going to make Jalen Hurts beat me throwing it from the pocket without A.J. Brown. I don't think he can do it. I'd rather have him do that than have him scramble or run around. There's plays, if you go back and watch, where those guys aren't even really trying to sack him. They're just trying to keep him in the pocket and make him throw the football. And I think he did a pretty good job taking advantage of that.
Well, he did, yeah. I mean, they were able to win the game on a throw from the pocket he made at Dallas. Got it. Ross, let's end with this. Two-part question for you. Did the Chicago Bears draft the wrong quarterback at number one? And how big of a problem do we have on our hands in the NFC East? Because Jaden Daniels looks like the real deal for the Commanders right now.
So the answer to your first question is yes. The Bears did make the wrong choice, just like the Panthers did the year before. Quite frankly, just like the Jags did the year before, taking Trayvon Walker over Aiden Hutchinson. And that is not just based on a three-game sample size. It struck me so much, Joe. Every guy, almost every like quarterback guru, right? Greg Cosell and Chase Daniel and Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick, everybody that came on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast before the draft, they all raved about Jaden Daniels. Phil Sims, I'll add another one. And they all either said they liked him more than Caleb Williams, or the way they talked gave that indication. So I think that's important context, that it's not just the three games so far. And he's a major problem for the Eagles. He's a major problem for the entire NFC East. Listen, I've been on teams with bad quarterbacks, average, good, and I was in New England with Brady, right? When you have a quarterback that you think is a star, a franchise guy, it changes the entire organization. I'm telling you right now, if you were down there in Washington, even the sales guys, right, the social media, their chest is out. They're walking on their toes. That whole organization now believes, and especially you combine that belief with a new head coach who's a positive guy in Dan Quinn, you can't tell those guys that they're not going to win the division now, right? Like they really think we got the guy, we got the right coach, we got a star quarterback, the sky's the limit. The Commanders are going to be a problem the rest of the year. They might even be the biggest threat to the Eagles, more so than the Cowboys.
Don't tell Joe.
Yeah, I've been on this since the summer. I mean, I didn't even think he'd be this good, but I feel this coming, Ross. He had more touchdown passes than incompletions last night. That throw he made and getting hit.
Don't pick yet.
Insane.
Insane. And they haven't punted in two games. They haven't punted since week one of the season. It's I mean, they're fun to watch, but I do think it's a problem for the Eagles. Ross, we appreciate you hopping on as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week, Ross. Thank you.
Sounds great. See you guys.
Have a good one.
Ross Tucker, NFL. Oh, boy. That was I didn't know where he was going to go with that answer, but he was strong that the Bears picked the wrong quarterback. Daniels looks like the real deal. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. We have a surprise guest coming up next. Someone I once talked to about the division being over. And it is over now.
Let's go.
That's next. Midday Show. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gilley. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. As we celebrate a division championship for the Phillies. First time in 13 years, the Phillies are NL East champs. We'll see what that lineup looks like tonight after a celebratory evening for the Philadelphia Phillies. And, of course, Nick Sirianni, should he be allowed to override Kellen Moore? A lot of people say no today. I'm not loving the idea that he does, but, yeah, he should be allowed. He's the head coach of the football team, for better or for worse. Next hour, we'll get to a big investigation here involving the NFC East, something Ross Tucker just said really got our heads going here. Plus, kiss the baby and a fun addition to the show, some mean tweets from back in the day when I did pronounce in doom the NL East was over. One of those guys who disagreed with that sentiment is our guy, Paul Javits. We thought today, let's put a bow on this, because we debated back in the day, and now we're all celebrating together, Jolly, because the Phillies are NL East champs. How you doing, Jolly?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Well, I'm great, and we got a division champion here, Jolly, and now we get to look forward to a Red October. What's your feel on the Phillies right now and how they finish this thing out?
I think they've played great, been happy with what they've done. They've overcome some injuries. A little worried about the start of pitching and worried about Ranger, but everything else is good. They've done what they needed to do. Now let's go get a bye and maybe the one seed and rock on, because Red October is what it's all about.
Oh, it is. And now they got to finish the job. Jolly, I'm curious for you, because, you know, when we were debating last time, we were so, you know, we were far away from it. Now we're here, right? We're about to get to Red October. We know they're in as division champs. Jolly, how much of importance do you put on getting the one seed, I'm pushing for? Because they're going to get the bye. I think the magic number for the bye is just two. So that's pretty much there. It's about this weekend, how much they push for the one to try to beat the Dodgers. Do you think they need it to get to the World Series?
Well, it always helps. So they're going to have a bye anyway, so they're not going to play for a few days. So it's not about setting up a rotation or anything like that. The way I look at it, and I'm sure you was back in the day with this, with the playoffs at times, you play as hard as you can. You run through the wire, and you see where you are. You don't rest guys. We're going to be resting for a week anyway. You absolutely play for the one seed. I know some people want to play one team over another, but you're going to have to beat everybody to begin with. Yeah, I play for the one seed.
Jolly, when did you start to think that it was over? Because we debated in June and we had fun with it. I was early to it. Obviously, you didn't agree on that day. When did you start feeling this thing was a wrap? Was it late August? Because right after we had our debate, that's when the Phillies started to struggle, right? And even though the lead never got under five, they didn't exactly have a 10 or 12 game lead. When did you feel this thing was coming to an end? A couple weeks ago, last week, the end of August. But when did it hit you?
A couple weeks ago, I think every team in sports, or all of us in life, no matter what we do, you got to overcome challenges. When the iceberg gets in front of you, you got to confront it. They confronted that iceberg a couple different times after we spoke, and different other times you repel the challenge and go on. And a few weeks ago, maybe the middle of August, end of August, that was pretty clear to me that was going to happen for sure, and they did it. I think the resilience is a great part of a baseball team. It's going to do them well in the postseason. And it's done them well so far, but the job's clearly not done.
It is not. They got more to do here. They got a lot of wins to get in October. Jolly, thank you for calling in, and I'm sure we'll see you at the park in October. Thanks, Jolly.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Go Phillies.
Go Phillies. There he is. Jolly. So it hit him in late August. It hit everyone last night with the official bow on it. Hugh, when did you start thinking it was definitely over? A few weeks ago?
It felt like we were close. And so, yeah, that's when I started to feel like this was going to be something
special.
Remember
when Atlanta came here, and I think it was Labor Day weekend, that mm-hmm. felt like the end. That felt like it was going to be very hard to blow it at that point. Because I think I'm trying to remember what the lead moved to with that weekend. Seven? I think the lead on Labor Day was seven games.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it felt like, yeah, this thing's a wrap. I never bought the Mets as a team that could come all the way back and win this thing.
No, but it was kind of interesting to see that the Mets had kind of the same, followed the same path that they followed a few years ago. They start the resurge
yep.
right after that London game. And when we started to kind of take a back seat, that was a little concerning, but they kept it going.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to make playoffs. The Mets go to Atlanta this weekend. The Mets could make the playoffs. They've had a remarkable turnaround. I just never, like, if you're 14 games back in June, it's really tough to get all the way back. I never thought the Mets could come all the way back to win the division.
I'm so relieved. Not only they won the division, but I no longer have to deal with hearing the losers who bring up freaking 1964 every time the Phillies go down two runs or drop one game in the middle of the season. Like, that was the most maddening thing in the entire world, is that we'd win three games in a row, and then all of a sudden,
They lose badly to the Mets. And then the next day they're down 2-0 or 4-0 to the Mets. And everyone's like, this is not dude 64 all over again. Like, I'm emotional, but get freaking real, dude. Come on.
I was surprised at how much we heard of it. People were like, every time there was two losses in a row. And like, I get when people were concerned in July and August because they played poorly for, you know, 6 weeks. But there was a lot of concern. Like Kyle said, even when they lost a game or two, like, they're going to blow it. No, they were the best team. And the other teams weren't that good this season, especially Atlanta. The Phillies have done it. NL East champs. And now we look forward to a Red October. 215-592-9494. Coming on the other side, we'll get to everyone's phone calls. There are a lot of people waiting. We want to get everyone up here. 215-592-9494. Nick Sirianni, should he be allowed to override Kellen Moore? Yes, he's the head coach. Hugh and Kyle say no, he should not. Get out of the way. We've got some clever suggestions on how we should get out of the way today. Plus, kiss the baby next hour, Philly's reaction, and on the other side, an investigation. The Jaden Daniels breakout party last night led to an interesting exchange from an NFC East executive. Who said it? We open up an investigation X on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Let's show Jill, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard here. Ross Tucker is going to join the show coming up at 12:30. Perhaps a surprise coming your way at 12:45. We're working on something for you. Next hour, we have an investigation to open up here around the NFL and something we have to keep our eye on here in Philadelphia. Plus, kiss the baby as we'll eliminate another team after week 3 in the NFL. complete last night. Let's go to Terrence here in Springfield. What's up, Terrence?
Hugo, Kyle, what's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you feeling?
What's going on?
First of all, I want to touch on the Phillies, but I'm going to touch on the Eagles real quick. Sirianni shouldn't be overriding anything. Like, he's not good at that job. Last time I recall, didn't he give up play calling because he wasn't good at it?
Yes.
So his decision-making isn't there. Sometimes I feel like Sirianni's out here like he's playing Madden or something. He's out there going for it on fourth down.
That's not the first time I've heard that today.
Yeah, like, this is not Madden. Like, you hear me, the guys I play on Madden, I'm like, bro, you're going to punt? No, I ain't punting. They go for it, turn everyone down, they end up getting 21 skunk. Like, Sirianni, it's 2 weeks in a row, you could have cost us. It could have been 2 weeks in a row, you cost us losses. So I feel like if Kellen Moore, he's born here to do a certain thing, and that's run this offense. So, Sirianni, you run the team. You manage the team and do that because you're not good at situational. You're not good at play calling. So leave it to Kellen Moore. He knows what he's doing. He's a veteran. He's been in this league for a long time, and he's proven. So on that note, Sirianni, you need to take a back seat because I don't like your philosophy. I don't like your press conferences because it looks like you don't know what you're talking about. You're just all over the place talking about stories in high school. Like, I don't want to hear that stuff. I want to talk about how you're going to get this team going in the right direction and not cost us games. As for the Phillies, I told Kyle, I don't want no celebrating right now, man. I want us to finish the job. The Phillies have done this 3 years in a row, right? They've been in the playoffs.
Yep.
They've done all this champagne popping and all that. This is the thing I hate about baseball. This is the one thing I hate about baseball. They celebrate like they won a championship when they make the playoffs, when they win a division, when they make it to the next round, in the World Series. That's stupid to me because giving the team a false hope like they already won something that they didn't win. So I feel like let's hold off and let's pop them bottles and celebrate when we win that World Series. Because we all know the last couple of years, we collapsed. And the dancing on my own, it's okay. But, man, if we don't finish it this year, they got to trash that song.
Yeah, this is probably the last run they could use it for. And it probably will be. Terrence, we appreciate the call. Here's where I'm at on all the celebrations. And it is a uniquely baseball thing. It's like they celebrate after everything or, you know, on the path to a championship. This felt different because they hadn't won a division yet.
Yeah.
And it's a long journey to win this thing. I'm good with going crazy last night. I do wonder, and I expect, Hugh, let's say they win the division series, you know, a week from Tuesday, right, mm-hmm. against the Padres or Brewers or whoever. I think the first round victory celebration is going to be a little bit more subdued. It's old hat. I don't think the Astros, you know, they've been in the ALCS, what, 7 straight years? They've won some World Series.
Yeah.
I don't think they celebrate anymore after the first round the way they probably did 7 years ago, right?
They're used to this now. They expect to do it.
Now, that's what I think they'll celebrate. I just think it'll be a little more subdued. Now, if you make the World Series, that's hard, right? Like, go crazy again.
No joke.
And then the big one is the World Series. I expect you, though, if they win the first round series, they'll celebrate. I wouldn't imagine it'd be crazy, though.
No, they're probably going to still celebrate. But I was listening to him talk about last night how for Bryce, this is only the fifth time he's done it. Done it a couple times with the Nationals, I think.
And his first, well, obviously his first time here. Yeah, he won, I think, 2 or 3 with the Nats divisions. 12, 14, 16.
But the point
16?
Is this, they're hard to do. And so you should, I think that, since they've been doing it in baseball this long,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. But when you're in a situation where, you know, you've went to the second round and everything, I can see them toning it down a little bit and getting ready for the next one.
I have one exception because I'm with you. If they play the Mets in the first round in the NLDS and they beat them, I want them to act like the Mets acted when they won a game to get back 6 games in the division the other night. Like, yes. I don't think I can remember a group of weenies more than the New York Mets.
Well, led
this
by
year.
Alonso. He's a weenie.
And Nimmo. I think Nimmo is the ultimate weenie in all of baseball. I can't stand that dude. So if they beat the Mets, I want them to do all the little trots that Alvarez was doing around the bases, all of that stuff. I want them to rub it in their face because I can't stand that.
I do like that. All right, before we get to what Micah Parsons said about CJ GJ, we want to let you guys know, tomorrow night, our Schwarbaum Squad watch party at the Yards Tap Room. We're going to support Kyle and his foundation, Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes. And we got to thank Yards, Hugh. They just brought us a ton of great food for lunch. So what do you guys? You guys got the Carolina pulled pork sandwich?
Yeah, and some quesadillas.
How's that?
Got some quesadillas is nice.
Cheesesteak egg rolls.
Cheesesteak egg rolls are so good, man.
Yeah,
their food there is great. We appreciate they brought me the roasted root vegetable salad. salads, some hummus. They have everything there. You can experience the Yards Tap Room, the new menu, tomorrow night at the Schwarbaum Squad Watch Party. So, look, if you go, you donate $10, or you purchase a Schwarber Neighborhood Heroes camo t-shirt, the beers will be on Kyle. So just buy a t-shirt. The beers then are on Kyle. You heard me right. Support Kyle's foundation, and Kyle and his family are giving you a free Philly Standard on him tomorrow night. First pitch, 6:05. For info, go to 94WIP.com. We'll be there tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Can't wait for that. All right, so before we go any further with your phone calls here, CJ GJ, we know he was, you know, he was very excited after the win on Sunday, and he was talking about how they're the best secondary, best line, and he was, you know, he was excited. He beat his former team, a team that, in his mind, gave up on him. Well, Micah Parsons, as he's apt to do, he chimed in on one of the big stories in the NFL. Here's Micah on CJ GJ and the celebration on Sunday.
The Saints are a very good team, and CJ Gardner-Johnson said they're pretenders. They're not, there ain't no contenders, they're pretenders, and they have Derek Carr, remember that. I don't know who CJ Gardner think he is, bro. I mean, we've been dealing with this cat for a while. I mean, we just got to be a little bit real right here. Like, I think Derek Carr has validated himself way before CJ has ever done. Like, to in the most respectful way, I'm not taking away anything, but Derek Carr has been a, you know, a Pro Bowl quarterback, you know, before, you know, highest paid quarterback before. Like, let's be real. Like, Derek Carr has always been a pretty damn quarterback.
Pretty. Like, you mean attractive?
I think he means pretty good. He left that word out, the good word.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I would have rolled him until he told me,
like,
no.
He's a pretty quarterback. I was like, attractive? Is he attractive? I don't know.
What would you make of Micah there?
I understand him giving Derek Carr's flowers. you try not to be disrespectful. I think in the moment, I didn't take what CJ GJ said, I guess the way Micah did. I guess Micah's validating the fact that they beat the brakes off the Cowboys. So that's why he's saying what he said.
I think that's a lot of it, yeah.
You know. But no, I didn't have a problem with what CJ did. He was they played with a lot of bravado last week. The thing that I want them to do now is keep it up.
Do you happen to see CJ's response to Micah?
Yes, I did. I'm all about pettiness. I went on Twitter.
You saw what was going on?
Yeah, and I saw the responses that people had to CJ GJ compared to Micah Parsons. Well, people are ruthless.
The comment section is. So CJ chimed in after Micah kind of ripped him there and said, quote, fam, the league knows who I am. Forget the narrative. At Micah Parsons. You could check my track record and how I overcame a lot. Won a lot more playoff games than you too, my guy. And then the salute emoji.
No, I mean, that's a fact.
Well, those,
I mean,
you know,
that's a fact. But boy, like, not to be that guy, but boy, when you have other people that are on the sidelines that chime in, and they start checking resumes, it got a little real.
I think the funniest part of that audio is that we've been dealing with this cat for a while now. Yeah. Sounds like a police officer, like, damn it, this dude again. Like, yeah. We gotta go arrest this guy.
He's on the run again.
Yeah,
we had
a good win this weekend. But yeah, Micah was trying to justify that ass whooping that they took a couple weeks
ago. That's exactly what, because if the Saints are pretenders, what are the Cowboys? Yeah, yeah. That's
we're
what
good,
that was.
We're a good team, too.
He's in his feelings. Chris and Sewell's up. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys, sorry. I tried to get in yesterday. I didn't get in. I was down in New Orleans, and I wanted to talk about the game. But let's get to your today's question. Joe, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking, should the head coach have the right to overrule?
Yes,
right?
Yes. That's what we're debating today. Yep.
Not do we want him to.
Right. Should he?
All right, because I had a pretty heated argument with Kyle before this call.
And Kyle's an idiot.
With all due respect to Kyle, you know, it is like arguing with your two-year-old, and it is because, all right, we won't say because he's the head coach, but he's in charge. He's responsible. So, yes, at any given moment, he has the right to stick his two cents in and, if needed, overrule if he thinks he has a better idea. Did it work? No. And I want to go on the record. I wanted Sirianni fired after the end of last year. But now that he's back, now that he's a head coach, parent, he has the responsibility for these children. And he's in a no-win situation. This team wins a Super Bowl, he'll get no credit. It's going to be Jalen Hurts. It's Saquon Barkley. It's A.J. Brown. They don't make the playoffs, he gets all the blame, no matter injuries, no matter how bad those guys play, whatever.
Chris, I agree with you on this. I agree with what you said at the end.
That's what he signed up for.
Yeah, but he did sign up, but the Eagles created this scenario. Like, there's almost like, do it our way or we're going to be mad. Well, there's a natural element to human nature. Of push comes to shove. I'm the head coach. I'm going to make a call. I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm going to say we're doing it this way. Like, it's almost unrealistic what we're expecting out of this guy now.
I completely agree, Joe. And you're right. The Eagles created the scenario. This Eagles management is the same Eagles management that we finally had enough of Andy Reid. And Andy Reid was the complete opposite of this guy. He would just got to do a better job, got to do a better job. He wouldn't give you anything. I agree with you, Hugh. He's a long talker. He gives you too much. Your advice to him going forward is the best advice. Less is more. And just a little context. Are they calling for the head coach's head in Cincinnati right now? Are they calling for Mike Shanahan's head right now? Or Kyle Shanahan's head right now? Dallas. You know, so let's put a little context on this. I'm not a huge Nick Sirianni fan. He's not blameless, but he does have the responsibility of this football team, win or lose. And if they don't perform, yeah, fire them. But right now they're 2-1.
Well, they are. Yeah, should be
3-0. Should be.
Yep.
3-0.
I agree.
Well, they could have been if not for the play at the end. Chris, I agree. I mean, I think you make a lot of good points there. And there is also the point of this to where it's – I keep going back to human nature. Everyone knows – he knows if they don't perform, he's getting fired. So, like, the reality is he's going to try to add something on game day. Now, Hugh, the problem is he may be going too far. He may be going too far on game day, and that becomes a problem here. If he goes too far and he puts them in bad situations and then he's trying to talk his way through this thing – you know, that long talking never works, you.
No, it isn't. And I think that coach's best strategy throughout this whole process is just to lay out and let it play out. I mean, that's all you can do. Because at this point now, at this point in the season, you're going to get more questions. Every time there's a controversial call that's made, the question's going to come up. Hey, who made that call? And it's going to be spun in a way where, you know, they're going to try to talk around it, but you have to ask. As a reporter, you have to ask those questions. And he needs – the best thing that he can do for himself is, number one, maintain his composure and just answer it to the best of his ability. If anybody asks you who's making the play call, stay away from that.
Don't open up that can of worms.
No, don't open up that can of worms.
Let's get to that and a lot more with our next guest. Yeah, you know who it is. You know who it is, Ross. It's Ross Tucker, Hugh Douglas.
Hey!
Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You hear him on CBS with the games at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, how you doing today?
Ross.
I am doing fantastic. I'm telling you guys, no matter how I'm doing, I'm always doing great when I come on and you guys play a Taylor song and I start to smile.
Ross, help me out. I forgot what school you came from. What school you go to? You went to one of them Ivy League schools, correct?
Yeah, I went to Prince University. It's the number one school in the country. No big deal.
No, I'm saying, so Ross, I need to ask you, in that situation, before the half.
15 seconds to go.
If you're coaching a football team, Ross, with your Ivy League education.
Sure.
What are you doing in that situation?
Oh, Hugh, I am so glad you asked this. Guys, I can't tell you. I think this is a really, really big deal and really interesting. Because most of the time when Sirianni has made decisions the past couple years, aggressive or not, I think you could lean on the fact that the Eagles have arguably the best analytics department in the NFL and that they're going with whatever model they have that indicates that that's the best decision. And so we can all acknowledge, okay, that they're going to be aggressive or they're going to do what the analytics tell them to do. That's why the end of the first half was so fascinating. Guys, there's not an analytical model in the world that would say going for it was the right decision there. I don't believe for a second that the people that talk to Sirianni during games to tell him what he should do or not do, I don't believe for a second that they told him to go. He more or less did that totally on his own, which I find very interesting. I'm not opposed to it. I do think sometimes coaches can use their gut or can use their instincts. But in that particular situation, the cost-benefit analysis is not even close. Even if you get it,
you have to call timeout, and then you must throw one pass into the end zone. There could be a penalty. You could get sacked. You could get tackled short of the line of gain. That was the worst decision I think I've seen Sirianni make in terms of going for that and not kicking the field goal. But what's particularly interesting to me about it is, you know, the Eagles are a team that relies heavily on data, and he went against the data there. And I just find that fascinating, because usually, I guess I'm under the impression that typically, you know, he is very much in line with the data and what all the numbers guys are telling him. I mean, they have a guy that his whole job is the game management, clock management stuff. So I just find that whole dynamic to be fascinating, that he basically kind of went, I don't want to say went rogue, but he kind of did his own thing there.
Russ, the other part element to the play wasn't just the decision to go for it on fourth down. Sirianni volunteered after the game that he made the play call. It was his call on the play they ran, which obviously didn't work. But then that opens up a whole another can of worms. Russ, you of all of us here in this conversation, you're the only one that was on the offensive side. He was a defensive player I've been watching since high school. Russ, is that common? Is this over the top? Like, he's not the play caller, Kellen Moore is, but he's an offensive head coach. Take us into how it typically works. Do you think it's, you know, is it right that he's overruling him or changing a play, or is this kind of normal for a non-play caller, but that's his area of expertise to say, I want to run this play?
So the interesting part about that, Joe, is, you know, as a player, you never really know for sure how often the head coach overrules the coordinator, but that is very much a thing with the head coach's side of the football, right? Like, I don't think that Sirianni would ever do that with Vic Fangio, but I'm pretty confident he did it a number of times last year with Brian Johnson, right? Like, Brian Johnson was the play caller last year. He was the OC, but I'd be stunned if there weren't multiple times where Sirianni, you know, felt like he had a feel for something, felt good about something, and said, hey, Brian, let's, and sometimes it might just be, let's run it here. Sometimes it might be, let's take a shot here. Sometimes it might be the actual play. Like I said, hard to know exactly how often coaches do that, but definitely that happens, I would say, more often than people realize. You don't usually hear about it because it's not really in anyone's best interest, right? If the play is not successful, the head coach doesn't want it out there that he overruled. And even if the play is successful, it's still not something that you want to put out there a lot, that the head coach is overruling the coordinator, more or less for what we're going through right now, right? More or less for this conversation, because then it's always the conversation of, well, how do you know when to overrule or not to overrule, when to go your own way or not, which is basically similar to what we just said about the decision to go for on fourth down at all.
Yeah, you almost twist yourself into a pretzel to figure the whole thing out. Ross Tucker joining us here. Ross, what did you make of the play of Jalen Hurts on Sunday? Yeah, very productive, completion percentage well over 70, and that's without Lane, without the right guard, without both receivers at the end, led a game-winning drive. But, of course, there's two more turnovers, including interception in the end zone. Ross, what did you make of how Jalen played in this game?
I would give him a B, I guess. You know, one of the things I think is interesting, a couple things. His pocket presence leaves a decent amount to be desired for me. I still think he leaves at times when he shouldn't and does not. You know how, like, remember back in the day, Dan Marino always would just slide a little bit or step up? I mean, Dan Marino ran like a 7-second 40, yet he was such a good pocket mover. Brady's obviously was fantastic at it. I still think that's an area for improvement. For Hurts, the two things that really jumped out to me about this game, guys, it still looks to me like there are times on a zone read where he pulls the ball and runs it when it looks to me like he should be giving the ball to the running back.
Mm.
I almost wish they would call more just design runs. And then also, the same thing on the RPO game. There are times where he'll pull it and throw it, and again, it looks like there's a big hole for the running back. The thing that's so interesting, I want you guys to watch it. We'll see what happens Sunday, because last year, obviously, Bowles and the Bucks blitzed the crap out of Jalen. But if you watch the Saints,
No, I think the offensive line did a good job. They did. And they were giving him really a crazy amount of time. But, and Hugh can speak to this better than I can, Joe, because I'm quite sure Hugh probably hates it. But the Saints, on a lot of those snaps, they were cage rushing, Joe, which means their primary focus is to not let the quarterback escape, as opposed to trying to beat your offensive lineman no matter what and trying to get a sack. That was secondary. What was primary for the Saints was to bull rush, was to keep Hurts in the pocket. Dennis Allen, the D coordinator and head coach for the Saints, he basically decided, and by the way, I think he made a wrong choice, but he basically decided, I'm going to make Jalen Hurts beat me throwing it from the pocket without A.J. Brown. I don't think he can do it. I'd rather have him do that than have him scramble or run around. There's plays, if you go back and watch, where those guys aren't even really trying to sack him. They're just trying to keep him in the pocket and make him throw the football. And I think he did a pretty good job taking advantage of that.
Well, he did, yeah. I mean, they were able to win the game on a throw from the pocket he made at Dallas. Got it. Ross, let's end with this. Two-part question for you. Did the Chicago Bears draft the wrong quarterback at number one? And how big of a problem do we have on our hands in the NFC East? Because Jaden Daniels looks like the real deal for the Commanders right now.
So the answer to your first question is yes. The Bears did make the wrong choice, just like the Panthers did the year before. Quite frankly, just like the Jags did the year before, taking Trayvon Walker over Aiden Hutchinson. And that is not just based on a three-game sample size. It struck me so much, Joe, every guy – almost every like quarterback guru, right? Greg Cosell and Chase Daniel and Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick, everybody that came on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast before the draft, they all raved about Jaden Daniels. Phil Sims, I'll add another one. And they all either said they liked him more than Caleb Williams, or the way they talked gave that indication. So I think that's important context, that it's not just the three games so far. And he's a major problem for the Eagles. He's a major problem for the entire NFC East. Listen, I've been on teams with bad quarterbacks, average, good, and I was in New England with Brady, right? When you have a quarterback that you think is a star, a franchise guy, it changes the entire organization. I'm telling you right now, if you were down there in Washington, even the sales guys, right, the social media, their chest is out. They're walking on their toes. That whole organization now believes, and especially you combine that belief with a new head coach who's a positive guy in Dan Quinn, you can't tell those guys that they're not going to win the division now, right? Like they really think we got the guy, we got the right coach, we got a star quarterback. The sky's the limit. The Commanders are going to be a problem the rest of the year. They might even be the biggest threat to the Eagles, more so than the Cowboys.
Don't tell Joe.
Yeah, well, I've been on this since the summer. I mean, I didn't even think he'd be this good, but I feel this coming, Ross. He had more touchdown passes than incompletions last night. That throw he made
and
getting hit.
Don't pick yet.
Insane.
And they haven't punted in two games. They haven't punted since week one of the season. It's. I mean, they're fun to watch, but I do think it's a problem for the Eagles. Ross, we appreciate you hopping on as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week, Ross. Thank you.
Sounds great. See you guys.
Have a good one.
Ross Tucker, NFL. Oh, boy. That was I didn't know where he was going to go with that answer, but he was strong that the Bears picked the wrong quarterback. Daniels looks like the real deal. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. We have a surprise guest coming up next. Someone I once talked to about the division being over. And it is over now.
Let's go.
That's next. Midday Show. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Should he be allowed to override Kellen Moore? A lot of people say no today. I'm not loving the idea that he does, but yeah, he should be allowed. He's the head coach of the football team, for better or for worse. Next hour, we'll get to a big investigation here involving the NFC East, something Ross Tucker just said really got our heads going here. Plus, kiss the baby and a fun addition to the show, some mean tweets from back in the day when I did pronounce in doom the NL East was over. One of those guys who disagreed with that sentiment is our guy, Paul Jarvis. We thought today, let's Sprint put a bow on this because we debated back in the day, and now we're all celebrating together, Jolly, because the Phillies are NL East champs. How are you doing, Jolly?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Well, I'm great, and we got a division champion here, Jolly, and now we get to look forward to a Red October. What's your feel on the Phillies right now and how they finish this thing out?
I think they've played great. Been happy with what they've done. They've overcome some injuries. I'm a little worried about the start of pitching. I'm worried about Ranger. But everything else is good. They've done what they needed to do. Now let's go get a bye and maybe the one seed and rock on, because Red October is what it's all about.
Oh, it is. And now they got to finish the job. Jolly, I'm curious for you because, you know, when we were debating last time, we were so, you know, we were far away from it. Now we're here, right? We're about to get to Red October. We know they're in as division champs. Jolly, how much of importance do you put on getting the one seed I'm pushing for? Because they're going to get the bye. I think the magic number for the bye is just two. So that's pretty much there. It's about this weekend, how much they push for the one to try to beat the Dodgers. Do you think they need it to get to the World Series?
Well, it always helps, though. They're going to have a bye anyway, so they're not going to play for a few days. So it's not about setting up a rotation or anything like that. The way I look at it, and I'm sure you was back in the day with the playoffs at times, you play as hard as you can, you run through the wire, and you see where you are. You don't rest guys. We're going to be resting for a week anyway. You absolutely play for the one seed. I know some people want to play one team over another, but you're going to have to beat everybody to begin with. Yeah, I play for the one seed.
Jolly, when did you start to think that it was over? Because we debated in June and we had fun with it. You know, I was early to it. Obviously, you didn't agree on that day. When did you start feeling this thing was a wrap? Was it late August? Because right after we had our debate, that's when the Phillies started to struggle, right? And even though the lead never got under five, they didn't exactly have a 10 or 12 game lead. When did you feel this thing was coming to an end? A couple weeks ago, last week, end of August. But when did it hit you?
A couple weeks ago, I think every team in sports or all of us in life, no matter what we do, you got to overcome challenges. When the iceberg gets in front of you, you got to confront it. They confronted that iceberg a couple different times after we spoke, and different other times you repel the challenge and go on. And a few weeks ago, maybe the middle of August, end of August, that was pretty clear to me that was going to happen for sure, and they did it. I think the resilience is a great part of a baseball team. It's going to do them well in the postseason. And it's done them well so far, but the job's clearly not done.
It is not. They got more to do here. They got a lot of wins to get in October. Jolly, thank you for calling in, and I'm sure we'll see you at the park in October. Thanks, Jolly.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Go Phillies.
Go Phillies. There he is. Jolly. So it hit him in late August. It hit everyone last night with the official bow on it. Hugh, when did you start thinking it was definitely over? A few weeks ago?
It felt like we were close. And so, yeah, that's when I started to feel like this was going to be something
special.
Remember
when Atlanta came here, and I think it was Labor Day weekend, that mm-hmm. felt like the end. That felt like it was going to be very hard to blow it at that point. Because I think I'm trying to remember what the lead moved to with that weekend. Seven? I think the lead on Labor Day was seven games.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it felt like, yeah, this thing's a wrap. I never bought the Mets as a team that could come all the way back and win this thing.
No, but it was kind of interesting to see that the Mets had kind of the same, followed the same path that they followed a few years ago. They started the resurge
yep.
right after that London game. And when we started to kind of take a back seat, it was a little concerning, but they kept it going.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to make playoffs. The Mets go to Atlanta this weekend. The Mets could make the playoffs. They've had a remarkable turnaround. I just never, like, if you're 14 games back in June, it's really tough to get all the way back. I never thought the Mets could come all the way back to win the division.
I'm so relieved. Not only they won the division, but I no longer have to deal with hearing the losers who bring up freaking 1964 every time the Phillies go down two runs or drop one game in the middle of the season. Like, that was the most maddening thing in the entire world, is that we'd win three games in a row, and then all of a sudden, they lose badly to the Mets. And then the next day, they're down 2-0 or 4-0 to the Mets. And everyone's like, this is 1964 all over again. Like, I'm emotional, but get freaking real, dude. Come on.
I was surprised at how much we heard of it. People were like, every time there was two losses in a row. And, like, I get when people are concerned in July and August because they played poorly for, you know, 6 weeks. But there was a lot of concern. Like Kyle said, even when they lost a game or two, like, they're going to blow it. No, they were the best team. And the other teams weren't that good this season, especially Atlanta. The Phillies have done it. NL East champs. And now we look forward to a Red October. 215-592-9494. Coming on the other side, we'll get to everyone's phone calls. There are a lot of people waiting. We want to get everyone up here. 215-592-9494. Nick Sirianni. Should he be allowed to override Kellen Moore? Yes, he's the head coach. Hugh and Kyle say no, he should not. Get out of the way. We've got some clever suggestions on how we should get out of the way today. Plus, kiss the baby next hour, Philly's reaction, and on the other side, an investigation. The Jaden Daniels breakout party last night led to an interesting exchange from an NFC East executive. Who said it? We open up an Investigation X on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 94 WIP.